Hello, everybody. This is Fikrita Veskovic, or Fik as I'm known in my closest circles. Today's my first podcast. It's Wednesday, February the 26th, 2020, and it's the day of new beginnings for myself. So you're probably wondering, why a podcast? Why me? And that's a really good question. Why am I so special, you're wondering? Well, I'm not. That's the honest truth. I'm just like everybody else. I'm an average mum, an average wife, an average daughter, an average sister, an average friend. Actually, not so great a friend sometimes, but I try. And what this podcast is really about is just a way for me to share some of the information, some of the stories, and some of the insights that I've had in my almost 40 years. And just to prelude to that, the reason why this podcast is called 40 again is because I'm turning 40 this year. The only difference is that I've actually turned 40 before. So my first time was in 2016, and it was an amazing 40th. So I decided that I was going to turn 40 every year from that point onwards. So yes, I'm turning 40 this year, and again next year. And I turned 40 last year also. So the reason why this show has been called 40 again is because it's a running joke between my friends and family that it's always my birthday and I'm always turning 40. So I thought it would be a great way for me to start this new part of my life talking about, I guess, the first 40 years and what I hope the next 40 will bring. So a little bit about myself, just to start. I'm a mum of four boys, beautiful boys, 7, 9, 10 and 13. Different stages. We've got early primary school and early high school and some kids right in the middle there. So we have a different set of challenges and a different set of information and levels of communication, which is something that I pride myself in because it's something that I really enjoy. And I guess that's another insight into how this started. A lot of it is about my storytelling. So on a car drive to drop my oldest boy off to high school one day, I was telling him a story about one of my travels and something that I'd learnt. And he said to me, "Mum, why don't you start a podcast?" And I said, "What would I talk about?" And he said, "Everything, things that you talk to us about. So things about your travels, things that you've learned, things that you want, things that you need." And I kind of laughed it off at the time. But then I reflected on a few of my really close friends over the years that have said things to me like, "You should be on radio, and you know, you've always got a story to tell or something to share." And I realised that that's where my passion is, that I do love to share and I love to ask questions. I love to talk about things and I love to find out why and how people tick. So one of the things that most people know about me once they meet me is the fact that I'm a bit of an investigation or analyst, whatever you want to call it. I like to know who you are. I want to know your family, your siblings, your culture, your religion, where you grew up, what kind of schooling you had, etc. And it helps me really put a little frame up in my mind and start to build on the picture of who you are. Not to say that all of those things are who you are, but they definitely have an impact, as mine has had an impact on me. So a bit about my background. Both of my parents were born in former Yugoslavia in Bosnia and moved over to Australia in the late 60s, early 70s. And both my brother and myself were born here. Yes, sorry, that's right. I have an older brother. He's about 5 years older than myself. And so we were both born here and basically grew up in one of the toughest neighbourhoods with a really bad reputation, Broadmeadows. And it was, you know, definitely something I didn't understand at the time, you know, where we were and what we were sort of exposed to, I guess. But we did live a very sheltered existence, coming from migrant parents who didn't have a big support network or didn't really speak the language. Basically, they stuck to people they knew or people they met through the community, through religious or cultural events, and they were busy working hard, trying to make a living and get us through school, etc. So our existence was quite sheltered until we were in our teens, I guess, and then we were exposed to, you know, different parts of the community and growing up, you know, from having a part-time job to travelling on the, you know, transport system. But in all honesty, Broadmeadows was actually a great place to grow up. I didn't really have any issues. And, you know, in the later years, there was an explosion of the Turkish population in the area, which was great for me because I had, you know, a great amount of Turkish friends and girlfriends, and we had a very similar upbringing and set of rules, I guess, which I found challenging with some of my friends who were not from migrant parents or from, you know, the regions where I was from. So having some people around me who had the same type of rules and expectations and limitations just made life easier because they never asked me to sleep over, really, or to go anywhere that was not allowed, or they knew, I guess, what we could and couldn't do at that age. So that was something that I really look back on and think it really did help me through that teenage period, because I had people around me who understood me. Because at the school that I went to, at the time that I went there, there were actually not a lot of, you know, people from other backgrounds, I guess. It was a mainly Australian school, which was, you know, a great thing for me. But it did mean that sometimes people didn't actually understand that I couldn't go to all the parties and that I couldn't do sleepovers and all of those things. So now that I'm turning 40, and a lot of my friends around me are around 40 also, I am really aware of how different 40 looks these days and how different 40 feels for everybody around me. So just as an example, I have 40-year-old friends who have adult children, driving, working, going to uni. I also have 40-year-old friends with newborn babies. I have 40-year-old friends that are just like me who have school-aged children. And then when it comes to that's from a family perspective. But then looking at even the rest of our lives, looking at careers and things like that, I have 40-year-old friends who are thriving in these amazing careers, and they work full time and they travel and they have all of these expectations put on them in the real world, as I like to call it. And then I have friends who are, you know, really struggling to find part-time work or work that, you know, gives them the flexibility to still do pick up and drop off because they don't have you know, the ability or the availability of you know, childcare or the resources. You know, in reality, some people don't earn enough money to pay for childcare every day. And if they're going to pay for childcare every day, there's really no point in them going into work and putting everyone through that amount of, you know, stress and strain, particularly if you have a larger family. And I'm speaking from experience there. So I guess one of the, you know, the things that I think I'd love to talk about in the podcast is all of these variations and you know, what it means, because at the moment, you know, I am feeling a little bit lost and confused. I had a really successful career before I had children, And I decided to have a break after I had children, or while I was having children, and basically focused on our family business and also on renovating and, you know, moving into a home that suited our family. And obviously, having four children in quite a limited space of time meant that going back to work was really not an option, you know, in a full-time capacity. And even from a part-time perspective, as I talked about earlier or mentioned, the expense of actually putting four children into childcare was so great that it really was not a worthwhile thing for me to pursue, particularly since there were other things going on in our lives at the time, such as, you know, extending and renovating a home, you know, selling the home we were living in, which also required the renovation, etc. So there was always a lot of other stuff, as well as, you know, starting primary school, different kinder times, etc., etc. So, you know, a crazy few years that when I look back on now, I do actually think, wow, that was a really, really hectic, stressful, physically demanding time. But I learned a lot from going through all of that, and also learning how to juggle and how to manage, I guess, the unexpected things that happen when you have kids of different ages, and when, you know, everything impacts you, including the weather, because I used to spend, you know, most of the day doing drop-offs and pickups while I had one baby, you know, sleeping in a pram. So, you know, all of those things have really now given me, I guess, some strength, or some inner strength, into what I'm capable of and what I can do. The only problem is that translating that into a resume isn't always easy, because, you know, the last, you know, corporate experience I had was 13 years ago now. And last year I decided to pursue a dream of mine, which was to work at the Tullamarine Airport. As a child, my dad had worked at the airport in a maintenance slash cleaning slash housekeeping, I don't know what else you want to call it, job, night shift job. And so fortnightly he'd have to go into the airport to actually pick up his pay packet, which was literally an envelope with cash inside it, which is so funny now when you think about it. But I used to go with him on occasion when he would go to pick up his pay, and, you know, we would be able to walk through the, you know, the where only the employees could go, which was really the back end of the international arrivals and departures section. And, you know, I just loved being there. I just loved the energy. And some days he would stop and chat to people, and I would just sit at the front of the arrivals lounge and just cry. I would just cry watching people be reunited with their family, with their partners, with their friends. It was so emotional. And it, although I was crying, it was great crying. It was like a release. It was something, even as a child, that I was just, it was a feeling that was so powerful that it left a real impact on me. And then, you know, as a child, traveling back to Bosnia a few times, and, you know, being able to get on an aeroplane, and used to look at all the staff, you know, at the airports and on the planes, and just was always just so impressed by their grooming and their uniforms and, you know, their demeanor. And they always felt so professional yet friendly, and they always looked the part. I don't remember ever seeing anyone that looked out of place or that looked disheveled or any of those things. Everyone, no matter whether they were thin or, you know, chubby, or whether they were short or tall or black or white or whatever, basically everyone just looked amazing. So I think that left a real impact on me as well. So a few years ago, my husband and I discussed, you know, the fact that now that my youngest was at school, there was going to be a bit of breathing space for me to, you know, try to get back into the workforce, at least in a part-time way, and really explore, you know, what it is that I'd like to do for this next chapter of my life. Because I go in with the belief that once I'm back in the workforce, I'm there for a long time now until retirement. So I want to be doing something that I enjoy and going somewhere I want to go. And one of the factors for me also was obviously having the kids at school and, you know, leaving them, I guess, for the first time. I wanted to be able to get back to them quickly if I could. And so all of these factors really, gave me the strength. And obviously my husband, who was always very supportive of me going for something that I really wanted to do and wanted to try, gave me the strength to apply for a position at the airport. So basically, you know, I was looking around at the time, what was available at different airlines. I didn't really know how it all worked. So I just kept an eye out for airline jobs, airport jobs, etc. And ended up applying at a place for a company that provides airline ground staff for various airlines at the airport. So normally, it's airlines that basically contract their ground services out to this particular company. And then this company provides staff to basically perform all of the ground crew functions. They're not solely aligned with any particular airline, but they do have larger contracts than some larger than others. But through that process my first video interview, which was an experience, going in for a meet and greet, I was offered a position, to work in customer service at the airport, which was honestly amazing. I was so excited, and, I'd had a few of my friends knew of my, dream to work at the airport, and, we made little jokes about, me with my red lipstick, and I even went out and bought myself a red lipstick to wear to my first day at work. Because anyone that knows me knows I don't wear lipstick. So it was a big thing for me to go and buy this red lipstick to wear. And so being offered a position in the customer service role at the airport was just amazing. I felt like I'd won the lottery. So, I basically was very quickly advised of the training schedule, which was quite demanding initially. The fact that I had to go for my uniform fitting, etc. And then it all sort of happened very quickly after that, after the web interview and my meet and greet. I was basically in training about a week later. And that, in itself, the training and the trainer and being on the tarmac and actually having to walk out onto the tarmac where all the planes were, into a training room with a trainer who had years of experience in the airline industry, and was just very interesting, like an interesting person to listen to, and someone who you did feel like there was so much there that, you could sit down and have a coffee, and, she was someone I definitely wanted to investigate. but then the training itself was really interesting and really formalized a lot of the things that I did already know about traveling and about being on airlines and etc. But it was a really good opportunity for me to see how quickly I could learn a new system and new processes and new terminology. And thankfully, I think that I was able to do that quite quickly. And I felt quite confident. I am someone that is a bit of a doer, so I did want to get out there and actually try things. But doing the training itself and, being in a small group was a really great experience. And The girls that were in my group for training were just gorgeous. I mean, talk about a great mix. So I think it was, I think with the recruitment in this type of company, it goes through waves. And I'd heard that the last wave prior to my intake was quite a large number of males were in the intake. And then with my intake, and no offence to anyone in the group, if you're listening, but I felt like it was, you know, half the spring chickens and half not so spring chickens. Obviously, which one, I was one of the not so spring chickens, which was actually great. It was really nice to see other people who had a passion for the industry and wanted to try something new. We all did know it was shift work. I don't think we knew all of the details about the pay and the, I guess, the structure of, you know, any being aligned with an airline, whether you got any benefits and stuff like that. So that was something that you kind of learnt, you know, along the way. But I know initially shift work was something that I was actually looking forward to. I felt really comfortable knowing that there would be days where I may miss drop off, but I'll be there for pickup or et cetera, et cetera. So it meant that my week would be varied every week, and that suited me at that particular time. So the training was great, and you know, then we actually started to get out there on the actual floor and speak to passengers and you know, watch some of the other staff deal with issues and things like that. And you know, as I said, to be completely honest, you know, the expectations that I had had of working at the airport and working, like, they were being met. You know, I really enjoyed going to work. I enjoyed getting ready for work because, as I mentioned earlier, you know, that appearance, that presentation, that part of that environment, you know, I really loved that. And knowing that I was in an environment where everyone that worked there had been drug checked and security checked and was dressing to a certain standard, there was a certain comfort in knowing that, that, you know, everyone you're on the bus with has been through the same sort of procedure as you to be there, and everyone that you're in the workplace with, you know, as I said, I think it was one of the things I didn't really think about before, but one of the things that really made me enjoy that experience even more. And then I guess came reality. Then came, you know, my first rosters and my first shifts, you know, some starting at 5 o'clock in the morning, you know, some starting at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. It was a part-time job, so there was an expectation that, you know, from my perspective, I thought I'd be working possibly 3 days, maybe 4 days a week. It didn't always work out like that. Some of the shifts were a little bit shorter than I'd expected, and some of them were quite early. And a lot of the newbies would get the very, very early morning shift, which was always a great way to spend 3 hours, 5 o'clock in the morning. But one of the things that I, you know, thought would be challenging, or I wasn't sure, I guess, how I would cope with, was being in an environment with so many young people. You know, basically a lot of uni students, a lot of young supervisors, a lot of young staff. And I was a little bit confronted by that. I think it did make me feel my age a little bit, because I did think about where I was at their age and what I was doing, which was a whole other world for me. I was in the corporate world and I'd just finished uni and all of those things. So I wasn't sure how I would cope with, you know, I guess a different conversation, a different mindset, another generation, and one that maybe, you know, so I didn't want to have to sell myself or sales pitch myself. So I just wanted to go in there and just learn and see how I felt. And I was shocked, to be completely honest. Like, I was shocked. I didn't expect the level of people that I met. And when I say level, I don't have a level gauge, I guess. what I'm trying to say is that, you know, these young people that I, you know, initially I think I might have just looked at them as, you know, the pretty girls in the uniform, were just full of, you know, so much more. Like, there were people I was meeting in their, you know, early 20s, mid-20s, that were just amazing. Like, their demeanour, their personality, their humour. And I really enjoyed being in their presence. I enjoyed being on shift with some of the supervisors, knowing that we would have a little joke and we would have a little laugh. And, you know, every shift I had, I'd learn something about how they dealt with, you know, an airline disruption of some sort, or a communication error of some sort, or whatever the challenge was. It was just amazing watching these young people, who I honestly probably, I didn't give them enough credit before I'd started, just handling it, doing it, you know, and being present, you know, when they were on shift, actually being present, you know, being there for every, you know, flight arrival, departure, cancellation, for the passengers, following up on things. And again, because it was an industry that I was just so interested in, I just loved being part of it. I was, you know, as I said, learning every shift and feeling quite enthusiastic. And as you can probably tell by me talking about it now, and this is like months after I finished working there, you know, I still, that energy was great. And, you know, honestly, some of the people that I met, you know, I know that they impacted my life in a positive way. So, you know, they've shown me that if you do have a passion, I guess, for something, and even if things are not perfect, which, you know, in no workplace, perfection doesn't exist in life in general. But obviously, like, being happy, going to a job where you're actually feeling happy and you love the environment, and, you know, the majority of the people are amazing. I mean, you know, you've ticked so many boxes there that sometimes some of the things that you don't, or you're not getting from your workplace, you know, it's worth it, I guess, you know, in the balance of things. So you might be asking then, why, if it was so good, why are you not there, from what you've just said? Well, that's, you know, a whole other ball game, because, you know, there are a lot of challenges with working in a customer service role, just in general, one of them being, I guess, the financial part. And, you know, when you're young and all the money that you earn is for you and for what you, you know, your dreams, and, I mean, I'm sure it's fine, but for, you know, someone who is, you know, turning 40 this year, and has a lot of varied experience, and I have been paid, you know, very well in previous jobs, it was really difficult for us to manage with, you know, the, I guess, that financial, you know, the constraints, I guess, of that particular type of job for me. And to be honest, you know, one of the reasons I went back to a job initially was because of the financial, you know, stresses any family, I guess, feels as the kids are growing older and as things are changing. But particularly when your partner, you know, has been the sole provider for many years in a family-run sort of small business and has had a bit of bad luck over the last few years. So I was trying really hard to make an impact, and unfortunately, you know, that role wasn't making enough of an impact. So, and on top of the fact that the financial, I guess, impacts were there, because of the shift work, it meant that I was impacting my husband's work as well. So because I wasn't there some mornings, he'd have to go in late. And because I wasn't able to do pickup, he'd have to finish early. And obviously, when you're being rewarded for, you know, all of those things, it's fine. But in my circumstance, it just wasn't working. He was being, you know, impacted quite a bit and quite stressed. And then there was a period where I basically was just unwell. I was unwell for over a month. And I'd had some sick leave, and then I'd gone to work unwell and really, really struggled. And on those days where I was really struggling, you know, one of the things that I guess was quite challenging for me was just watching how people reacted to me being unwell. So by this stage, I'd already been, you know, there for 7 or 8 months. No, probably actually even longer, probably about 9 months, and knew quite a lot of the people quite well. And I was pretty sure that they knew that I was not really sick before, or I hadn't taken time off or whatever. But, you know, in those times when I was really unwell, it was quite challenging for me to see that, you know, I guess there was no empathy for how and what I was trying to do by being there. So anyway, I took some more time off, and in that time that I was off, you know, just after some really long conversations with my husband, etc., you know, he really supported me for, you know, the 9 or 10 months that I was there. But I guess it came to a point where, you know, he sort of said, look, you know, the financial impact is not as I expected or as we expected. And so it's getting quite challenging for us to keep doing this. So I really think, you know, you probably need to look for something, you know, that's going to fit into our lives a little bit more and pay a little bit better. And so I resigned. You know, I spoke to my manager at the time and basically just finished up sort of as quickly as possible at that point, because I was still unwell. And, you know, I don't regret, you know, that, because I do think I sort of had done my time there. I really enjoyed the time that I had there and enjoyed meeting the people. But I also saw that there really was, there really was no long-term view for me there, because of my family structure and the lifestyle that we live. So although working at the airport, you know, and being in that environment was amazing, I couldn't see, you know, a position there that I felt, you know, would suit me long-term. And I did look for jobs that were for analysts or for, you know, for data and things like that, but a lot of them were not actually located at the airport. A lot of them were located in other offices, you know, in the city or whatever it was. So at that point in time, I guess, you know, they were the things that I was looking for. So, you know, I got to fulfill one of my, you know, childhood dreams of working at the airport, and I really did enjoy it, and I really, you know, feel like it's changed me. It's changed me in a way where I do see that if you have goals that you've set for yourself, and if you do set your mind to it, you can do it. And, you know, it may take a little bit longer than you expect. And sometimes when you get there, you realise it's not everything that you thought it was going to be. But that's okay too, because I guess that's part of the process. If everything was as we expected, you know, where would the fun be in it? So that was, I guess, you know, my journey at the airport and my journey sort of, you know, starting what I thought was the next chapter. I realise now that, you know, it was a chapter, but not the chapter. So it's then left me with a lot of question marks. Sorry about that. So I came out of that role and that job, and it was just prior to sort of the Christmas period. So I decided that I would apply for some positions, like short-term positions that I saw advertised. And I've done a few little things in the meantime, but basically wanted to have the Christmas period off and start fresh once the kids were back at school. So since the kids have been back at school, I have applied for, well, I actually started before they went back, so maybe the week or two before school started. I've applied for, you know, probably 20 to 30 different jobs, and I haven't actually got to one interview yet. So I spoke to a recruiter recently and he sort of suggested to me that any experience that's over 4 years old is really disregarded on your resume, which I found quite daunting because a lot of my corporate experience was over 4 years old and I was applying for all these corporate jobs. So I have to rethink my approach, I guess, to looking for a position because, yeah, I don't know my resume. And this is, again, a reflection on what happens when, you take leave of absence from one part of your life, which for me was my career, to focus on another part of your life, which was my family. And then when it's time for you to readjust, your resume really just doesn't reflect everything that you've learned or who you are as a person anymore and what you have to bring to a company. So I see that in my situation, and I can actually see it in quite a few friends around me who, you know, for various reasons have, you know, ended up having to look for new jobs, around their 40s, and, you know, are women with amazing experience, fantastic sort of work ethic, personality, you know, all of those things. But for some reason, it's really challenging to find a good job. And, you know, a lot of people talk about the pay expectations. A lot of people talk about the family dynamics and flexibility requirements, you know, but the reality is that there's a lot of, you know, really talented, really hardworking people out there who are just not being given an opportunity because, you know, their resume is not up to date. And when I say that, I don't mean that it's not updated with the most current information. I mean that due to other things going on in their lives and things that they've also learnt from. You know, I talked earlier about, you know, my challenges of, I used to call myself the bag lady because I used to have my three-child pram loaded up for the day, with my primary school child and his gear, and then I'd have my four-year-old kinder child and their gear, and the three-year-old kinder child and his gear, and then my baby in the pram sleeping with his baby stuff. And I literally had bags hanging off every part of my pram, my back. I had children on skateboards, extra seats, etc. And I would literally just walk around, you know, this little area that we live in, dropping people off, picking them up, having a coffee, having a chat, walking around. And, you know, I learnt so much in that time about time management, about organization, about pre-planning. I used to plan out, you know, our weeks, our meals, our life, basically. And, you know, on top of all of that, we were in the process of renovating a home where you literally have to buy, you know, every screw, every nail, every water fitting, every appliance, it's amazing how many things go into a build that until you actually have to go out and purchase them, I'm sure you just have no idea of the complexity. So all of those things were things that I was doing, as well as basically the back end of my husband's painting business. So at that time, he had quite a few employees. So I was doing all of the paperwork and the admin accounts, etc. So it's just one of those things where you look back and you say, I've learned so much, but how do I now translate that into something that an employer will look at and say, well, this person, you know, can juggle, can, you know, get things done, basically just gets on with the job, you know, and that's, you know, a struggle. That's something that I've, you know, and, you know, some of the feedback I got recently about my resume was that, you know, I probably didn't spend enough time developing and explaining all the jobs that I did for my husband's business, you know, our family business. So I basically, you know, talked about admin tasks or, you know, the the taxation or whatever it is, but I didn't actually go into any depth about what that actually means. And, you know, it's something that I guess because I've been doing it for so long, I look at it as, you know, just a normal part of, but I know that there are a lot of people who pay a lot of money for people to do that type of work for them, you know, for the bookkeeping and for the admin and the accounts, the tax, etc. So these are all things that, you know, I am currently in the process of, you know, looking at, updating, talking about, trying to understand what, how I can make things look different, feel different, so that I have a bigger impact when I send out my resume. Because as I said, I haven't had one interview yet. So I find that quite amusing, actually. Like, I'm university educated. I have, you know, about 10 years experience in the utilities industry. I've got a lot of retail experience, customer service experience. I've got project management experience. I feel like this is an online resume, actually. But yet I can't get an interview. And, you know, someone said to me the other day, are you applying for jobs that are just way out of reach for you? And I was like, no, not at all. I'm actually applying for jobs that I feel quite comfortable, that I could do quite comfortably and easily. And, you know, I don't have high expectations of, you know, getting to the top of the food chain or right away or doing any of that stuff. All I really want is a chance to do something, you know, that I'm going to enjoy. And I guess, you know, I enjoy this, you know, like I enjoy talking about things that are important to me or things that are happening and coming up. But I don't know how interesting you're all going to find it, or whether or not you'll find any value in, you know, the things that I'm talking about. But, you know, I'm going to give it a shot. I'm going to see sort of what comes of this, and feel free to send me, you know, some info on things you'd like for me to talk about, you know, or, you know, if you want to do that privately, I'm quite happy for you to use my Facebook page, and just send me a message about something you'd like me to talk about. You know, you may hear references of things about, you know, well, one of my friends or my friend or whatever it is, and it might be you. So just be careful. That's all I have to say. No, I will definitely try not to make a spectacle of anyone. I know that there will be times when my stories involve people, and those close to you will know who those people are. But for everyone else, I mean, it's just a story about, you know, an experience or something that I believe is going to impact in a positive way. So listening to my podcast should be a positive experience. you know, hopefully it'll just shed some light on what turning 40 again looks like, and possibly just give, you know, a reflection on what's going on in your life and how, you know, some of the things that some of us are going through align, and we do get each other, we understand, and we can support each other, and we can be that, I guess, that shoulder. You know, a lot of people like to only show you the Instagram moments. You know, but I guess for me, the Instagram moments, you know, although they, you know, set up some of that frame that I talked about earlier, you know, that comes from your culture and your religion and your background and where you grew up and all of that, you know, it is part of that frame, but it's definitely not you. And I think this is about maybe getting to a point where it's okay to show, I guess, some of your vulnerabilities and some of your insecurities and some of the things that aren't going to plan, that are not Instagram moments, like not getting an interview. but again, they're things that, you know, I think that by sharing them, and by showing people that You know, just because you can tick 10 boxes, it doesn't mean that the natural next step will happen or come. That's okay. It's part of the journey. It's part of learning. And you have to stay positive and look for ways, you know, to make the most out of it. And, you know, this is my way. This is my way of making the most out of the situation that I'm in at the moment. You know, I've talked about doing this for some time now. And, you know, it's been a plan in progress, and it's here now. It's time. And this is my first, you know, part of ever doing anything like this. So, you know, please be patient. If you decide to listen on and, you know, become one of the people who listens to what I have to say regularly and wants to, you know, maybe even start up a conversation where you send me some messages or whatever, I really appreciate your patience, because I'm learning too, and I'm looking forward to it though. You know, I felt such nervous excitement last night and even this morning, and the lead up for me to actually come into this studio and tape this today, you know, has been great. I've really felt a real energy that I needed in my life right now. So thanks for listening, because, you know, most of you that are listening today are people that I know, have met, love dearly, all of the above. So thank you for listening. I mean, it's, you know, it's something that, as I said, I hope you'll get something positive out of, and maybe not today's session, but definitely in the ones to come. And I will try to let you all know what, you know, the main topics are, so that if it is something that interests you, you can listen, and if it's not something that interests you, you can give it a miss. It's up to you. But I would love feedback, you know, and some, because I, you know, as I said, I haven't done this before. So thanks again for listening. I really appreciate it. And I hope that each podcast gets a little bit better. I plan to add some music and all of that in the coming weeks. Just working out how all of that will work over the tracks. So thanks again, and let me know what you think. Appreciate it.